Matthias interrupted. Those first two lines sound as if they could only be solved in the darkness. Look for the sword in moonlight streaming forth.
I agree, replied Methuselah. But the next line is of vital importance. It tells exactly when to look. At night, when day's first hour.
Matthias mused. Let's look at this logically. Go through it, word by word. Slowly, they repeated the line together. At night, when day's first hour. Methuselah slumped in his armchair.
I'm afraid it doesn't mean anything to me.
Wait, cried Matthias. Midnight is the last hour of the old day. So, by the same token, 1 o'clock in the morning is the first hour of the new day. But we still tend to class it as night time. It is as the rhyme says, at night, when day's first hour.
I believe you are right, said the old mouse. Day's first hour is not when it becomes light. It's 1 in the morning, still dark.
Matthias leaned wearily against a stack of books. But if the gatehouse is the threshold, where are we supposed to stand to see anything an hour after midnight?
That's easy, grinned Methuselah. The rhyme says, from o'er the threshold seek and you will see. It's simple. What is above our heads right now?
Matthias shrugged.
The wall, I suppose.
Methuselah banged his paw down on the arm of the chair.
Exactly. And where is the only place you can stand on a wall but on top of it?
Suddenly, it became clear to Matthias.
Oh, I see, he cried.
From o'er the threshold means that we must stand on the wall directly above the gatehouse. As fast as they could run, both mice hurried up the steps to the top of the wall. With Matthias in the lead, they pounded along the ramparts. Matthias stopped above the gatehouse and stamped his foot upon the stones.
I'd say about here. Would you agree?
Methuselah looked a trifle doubtful.
It looks to be a very rough approximation.
Matthias had to concede. He looked sheepishly about. The stones where they stood were no different from any other part of the wall. The trail seemed to have gone cold again. Dejectedly, Matthias sat down on a heap of rock and rubble that had been there since the invasion.
Huh. What are we supposed to do now? Hang about up here until after midnight and wait for a miracle?
The old gatehouse keeper raised an admonitory paw.
Patience, young one, patience. Let us take stock and review the facts. Lend me your knife for a moment.
Matthias drew Shadow's dagger from his belt and gave it to his friend. He sat watching as the old mouse began writing in the dust from the rubble.
Item 1. Martin is Matthias. Item 2. We have found Martin's tomb. Item 3. We have also found his shield and sword belt. Item 4. Our task is to find Martin's sword. Item 5. Where? From here, the top of the gatehouse wall. Item 6. When? At 1 in the morning when moonlight streams forth. Item 7. In which direction? To the north.
They sat in silence, digesting the facts on the list. Then Matthias spoke. Suppose we look to the north. Both mice turned their heads northwards.
Well, what do you see, young one? Queried Methuselah.
Matthias's voice was tinged with disappointment.
Only the abbey, part of the beehives, the north side of the wall, and the treetops beyond. What do your eyes see, old one?
Exactly the same as yours do, though perhaps a bit dimmer.
Don't give up hope, though. Let us keep looking. Maybe we'll see something.
The surveillance continued. Apart from retrieving his dagger, Matthias sat very still, peering northwards. Eventually he had to give up, as his eyes were beginning to water and he was getting a crick in his neck. Methuselah had fallen asleep in the afternoon sun. Angrily, Matthias slammed his dagger point deep into the edge of the rubble heap. "I told you it was a waste of time. Can't you stay awake for 5 minutes? Must you go to sleep on me?" The old mouse awoke with a start.
"Eh, what's that? Oh, Matthias, there you are. Dear me, I must have dropped off for a moment. Sorry, it won't happen again."
Matthias was not listening. He was digging in the rubble with his dagger. Methuselah watched him curiously.
"What in the name of goodness are you up to now?"
The rubble scattered as Matthias dug away madly.
"I think I've found what we're after. There's some sort of shape in the stone down here. Trouble is, there's too much rubbish on top of it. I think we need Formol's help again."
Formol and his team arrived panting, with Matthias running ahead. The moles collapsed on the rubble, breathing hard.
"You're only gotten bitty short legs, us moles do. Oi takes it yourn gentle mice needin' our help again."
This time, Matthias understood.
"Yes, please, Mr. Formol. Do you think that you and your team could possibly move this pile of rock and rubble? There's something we need to get at underneath it all."
Formol spread his stubby paws wide. He smiled winningly.
"You're no sooner said done, young'un. Where them loik are shifted to?"
Matthias shrugged. "Oh, anywhere, I suppose, as long as it's not in our way."
Formol spat on his paws and rubbed them together.
"All right, mateys. Best dump on this lot where it came from."
The two mice had to jump aside smartly as the mole team took over. With much
hurring and ahring, they waded busily in, bulldozing the enormous heap of rock and rubble off the top of the ramparts.
It tipped downwards in earthy showers, back into the trench in the abbey grounds whence it had first come. Matthias watched admiringly.
"What splendid workers these moles are, Methuselah."
As the hill dwindled, his friend heartily agreed.
"Indeed they are. Their skills and knowledge are passed on through families, you know. Earth, rock, shale or root, they can handle it all. Do you know, it was the moles that dug the foundations for this very abbey. Formol can claim direct descent from the mole who was in charge of the operation. In fact, it was Martin who bestowed the title Formol upon his ancestor."
As the mice conversed, the moles hurled the last of the rubble from the ramparts, then set about brushing the stones clean. Formol tugged his nose in salute.
"Are we done now, sirs? Well, bid thee good day."
10 seconds later, they were all gone.
"Moles aren't too fond of heights," observed Methuselah. "Right, let's see what they've uncovered."
It was a circle cut into the stone. On one side, it was cut shallow, while at the opposite side it was carved deeply. The centre was domed with 2 slots graven into either slope. At the apex of the dome was the letter M. Beneath it were carved 13 small circles, each with a similar face upon it. Constance came rambling along the wall, checking on the road beneath.
"Hello there, you two. Are you staying up here all day? You'll miss afternoon tea if you don't hurry. There'll be precious little left with 3 squirrels, 3 voles, and Brazel stag hare as guests."
Studying the carvings, Matthias waved absently at the badger.
"You carry on, Constance. We'll be down shortly."
The badger's natural curiosity was aroused. She came over and stood between the two mice. After a cursory glance, she threw up her paws in mock despair.
"Oh, no, not more puzzles and riddles."
Methuselah gave her a severe stare over the top of his glasses.
"My dear Constance, kindly do not pour scorn on things you know nothing of. Leave it to those with specialized knowledge."
Turning to Matthias, the old mouse continued,
"Yes, most interesting. These 13 small circles with smiling faces, what do you make of them?"
Matthias could only shake his head. He could not think what the circles might mean. Constance interrupted.
"What? Do you mean those things?
Huh, they're obviously the 13 full moons of the year."
Methuselah was distinctly piqued.
"How do you know that? Explain yourself."
Constance scoffed.
"Huh, any badger worth its salt knows all about the moon. Do you want me to recite all its phases? I can, you know."
Matthias was suddenly back on the track again. He counted along the moons, stopping at the sixth one. "That one will be this month, June. When is the full moon due in June, Constance?"
"It's tomorrow night," came the prompt reply.
"Why? Is something supposed to happen then? Some magic or a miracle?"
Methuselah ignored the badger's attempt at levity.
"If we stand up here at 1 o'clock in the morning on the night of the full moon, we may be able to find the sword of Martin the Warrior," he said rather sternly.
Constance scratched her muzzle.
"How are you going to manage that?"
Matthias ran his foot around the edge of the circle. "We're not quite sure yet, but we are trying to figure it out. You see, it's all linked closely with the rhyme from the wall of Great Hall, Martin's tomb, and the stuff we found in it. This sword belt, a shield, another rhyme on the back of—" Constance interrupted.
"What type of shield?"
"Oh, pretty much the standard kind used by warriors," Matthias replied. "A round steel affair with hand and arm holds." The badger nodded knowingly and continued where Matthias had left off.
"Yes, I've seen that sort of thing before. Not much to look at. In fact, just the type of shield that would fit precisely into this circle. Can't you see the slots for the armholds? But then again, if you look at that carved circle, you'll notice that it is cut so that the shield would tilt, probably to reflect the moonlight."
Both mice stared at the badger. There was awe and respect written upon their faces. Matthias shook her paw with great ceremony.
"Constance, wonderful badger, oh friend, don't worry about afternoon tea. You just sit yourself down right there, because I personally am going to bring you the largest, most delicious tea that has ever been served within the walls of this abbey."
The warm red stone ramparts rang to the echo of the three friends' delighted laughter. Chapter 8. Cluny lay with his one good eye half open. From beneath his slitted lid he watched Sella the vixen. The sly old devil was definitely up to something, he was certain of it. Cluny had secretly questioned Fangburn about the conversation that had gone on between Sella and her son. There was no doubt about it. The foxes were trying to dupe the warlord. Cluny had cursed Fangburn for 20 different kinds of an idiot. Fancy not being able to read and allowing Sella to write out a message. Imagine letting Chickenhound go free without first getting the scroll read. If he had been a little fitter, he would have personally slain his oafish captain. But as it was, Cluny kept silent about it all. Even if Sella was playing a double game, he needed the fox's healing powers to regain his health and strength. Meanwhile, Cluny the Scourge made his own counter-espionage moves. He allowed Sella to minister to his wounds, but he secretly stopped taking the herbs and potions to help him sleep. Early next morning, Chickenhound returned. He carried a bag laden with medicinal ingredients. Cluny feigned sleep, but secretly he observed the foxes closely. They nodded and winked at each other quite a bit. When they were reasonably sure he was asleep, the two held a hurried whispered conversation. And though unfortunately he could not hear what they said, their behavior was secretive enough to make Cluny sure he was right. They were planning a double cross. Clooney did not tell any of his officers of his suspicions. He kept everything to himself. This way there could be no possible leak of secrets. Clooney was content to watch and wait, getting a little stronger each day. Then after a while, he came up with a fiendishly simple idea. He ordered that the room be cleared. He wished to be alone so that he could rest. When he was quite sure that he would not be disturbed, Clooney took a quill and parchment from the bedside table. He drew a diagram, complete with pointing arrows, horde positions, lines of attack and defense, together with written instructions. It was a plan for the second full-scale invasion of Redwall Abbey. Clooney made it clear that the success of the attack depended solely on the battering ram breaking through the main gate. When he had finished writing, Clooney pushed the parchment under his pillow, taking care to leave just a small corner of it jutting out. His officers would be too slow and dull to notice it, a tiny scrap of parchment showing from beneath the pillow. Even if they should, they would attach no importance to it. But Sella the Fox would. Clooney settled down to wait. Red Tooth and Fangburn returned with their captive guest an hour later. Clooney stretched himself luxuriously and yawned aloud.
"Ah, I had a nice, peaceful nap without you three clattering about the room and creating a noise. How's that tree-felling coming along?"
Red Tooth leaned upon his spear.
"Shouldn't take much longer now, Chief. I've ordered some of them to get a good blaze going, so that the trunk can be fired and hardened."
Clooney flexed his injured tail slowly.
"Good. Make sure that all the large branches are cut off close to the trunk. It'll make it easier to carry. Now, Fox, how about changing these bandages and giving me something to make me sleep tonight? That stuff you gave me yesterday wasn't much use. I was tossing and turning for hours before I got any rest."
Sella made a sweeping, servile courtesy.
"Now that my son has brought my new ingredients, I can certainly give you medicine to make you sleep, sir. I guarantee you'll go off like a bug in a blanket, if you'll pardon the expression, sir."
"Just as long as it gets me to sleep," said Clooney, smiling inwardly.
That night, Clooney allowed Red Tooth and Fangburn to guzzle their fill from a cask of barley wine that had been found in the church cellars. He gave Sella permission to drink also. Clooney watched as the fox pretended to drink as much of the barley wine as the rat captains. While she was doing this, Clooney also pretended to take his sleeping medicine. Clooney and Sella continued with their pantomime, neither letting a drop pass their lips. It was late night. Clooney joined in the snores of his drunken officers. The room was comfortably warm. A lone candle flickered in its socket. Clooney felt the pillow move slightly. Sella was taking the bait. Clooney gave a big imitation snore and smacked his lips contentedly. Someday he must learn to play chess. He bet himself that he would be unbeatable. Clooney also made a wager with himself that the plans would be back, safely tucked under the pillow by morning, and that Sella would have an accurate copy of them hidden away somewhere. Now he could catch a few hours' sleep. No doubt the mice would be interested to learn of his scheme to attack the main gate with a battering ram. They would strengthen the gatehouse and deploy the main body of defenders in the immediate area. Clooney could have laughed out loud. While they were defending the gate, he would be tunneling under the southwestern corner of the abbey wall.
Chapter 9. The deep, warm, brazen voice of the Joseph Bell tolled across the tranquil meadows, its echoes fading in the leafy depths of Mossflower Wood. It was 11 o'clock on the night of the full moon. Inside Cavern Hole, the candles burned bright. most of the woodland defenders and red wall mice had retired to their beds. Those who preferred to stay awake were gathered by invitation of Matthias and Methuselah to a party supper. All who attended wished them well on their quest. Abbot Mortimer took the floor.
"My friends, red wall mice and honored guests, we are gathered here tonight, not only to pay tribute, but to add our heartfelt good wishes to Matthias and Brother Methuselah. May they have success and fortune in their venture this night, and may our abbey soon be enhanced by the restoration of the sword that belonged to Martin the Warrior."
The abbot took his seat among cries of "Hear, hear!" There was much paw shaking and fur patting. Matthias felt deeply honored, but very impatient. The hourglass had to empty twice more before the crucial time he awaited. He stole a sideways glance at his companion. Methuselah could hardly stop his eyelids from dropping. The hard work they had done, combined with the nervous tension, was beginning to tell upon the old gatehouse keeper. Matthias nudged him gently.
"Wake up, old one. If you're tired, I'll help you to your room. Constance and I can take the shield up to the threshold. You get a good night's sleep. We'll tell you all about it in the morning."
Methuselah came wide awake with indignation.
"You'll do nothing of the sort, you young scallywag. I could give you a 10-second start and still beat you to the top of the wall. Do you want to try me?"
Constance coughed and spluttered upon a candied chestnut. She roared with laughter.
"I wouldn't attempt it if I were you, Matthias. He's liable to beat you hollow in his present mood."
The old mouse, seeing the humor of the situation, began to chuckle.
"And don't think I couldn't, you great stripy lump. Here, what do you say we put this young mouse up in the dormitory? It's way past his bedtime. You and I could go to the threshold together."
Constance and Methuselah collapsed against each other, laughing helplessly. It was all Matthias could do to keep a straight face. He pretended to take offense at Methuselah's statement.
"Why, you old pair of relics, it wouldn't take me 2 ticks to bring you some warm milk and tuck you in your own beds. Then I'd be free to get on with the job myself."
The three friends laughed until tears streamed down their cheeks. Methuselah held his sides as he spoke between gusts of merriment.
"I say, Constance, you old fogey, oh, you'd better come along with us. Oh, Matthias is a bit old for this sort of thing."
Matthias had fallen off his chair. He waved his paws, pleading for the joking to stop, as he rolled about on the floor, exploding from bouts of giggling to fits of laughter. Basil Staghare tut-tutted severely as he remarked to Ambrose Spike,
"Tush, tush, dreadful table manners. Just look at those three, kicking up a hullabaloo like that. Eating's a serious business. They haven't touched a bite of supper, you know."
"Aye, so I see," grunted the hedgehog. "Here, you don't suppose they'd mind, do you?"
"Not at all, not at all, dear fellow,"
said Basil regally, as he shared the contents of the three plates between himself and Ambrose.
"Saves it all going to waste, what?
It was 15 minutes before 1 o'clock in the morning. Three figures crossed the abbey gardens as the moon broke from behind a drifting cloud bank. The nearby pond was bathed in a silver sheen, parts of the sandstone wall reflecting back a wavery bluish light. Constance and Methuselah carried lanterns. Matthias bore the warrior's shield upon his arm. They ascended the wall steps in single file, acknowledging the murmured good wishes of those on sentry duty. Matthias had decided against trying the shield in its niche before the appointed hour. He felt somehow that they must abide by the rules of the verse, waiting until day's first hour on the night of the full moon. It just had to be so. No use tempting fickle Dame Fortune. Solemnly the three friends gathered around the carving upon the ramparts. Matthias clutched the shield tightly waiting for the stroke of one. High above the small world of Redwall, the moon also waited, suspended in velvety space like a pale gold coin. It seemed that the minutes stretched into an eternity in which silence reigned over all. The great Joseph Bell boomed out once. It was 1 o'clock, day's first hour. Slowly, reverently, Matthias lowered the shield of Martin down onto the stone circle that had been carved many long years before to receive it. The shield made a mild clanking sound as it was laid to rest in its niche. It fitted perfectly into the stone receptacle. All three creatures stood back a pace to see what might happen. Matthias was first to cry out.
Look! The shield is reflecting the moonlight back into the sky.
The moonlight seemed to concentrate upon the highly polished steel dome in its designated position, sending an intense beam of white light back off into the night sky. Methuselah blinked. Holding his paw across his eyebrows, he stared into space, trying to follow the path of the reflected moonlight.
Truly, it is a most beautiful, wondrous sight, he breathed. Alas, my old eyes are not what they were. All I see is a light shooting off into infinity.
Wait, look at the abbey roof, Constance murmured. The beam cuts right across the top gable. I can see the weather vane as clearly as if it were day.
Good heavens, Matthias squeaked. You're right. The abbey weather vane, it's the one thing that's caught in the path of the light.
The north! The north!
Methuselah shouted.
It's the weather vane arm that points north. That's where the sword must be.
Solemnly, the three friends placed their paws one on top of the other. At long last, the mystery was solved. They knew now where the sword of Martin the Warrior had been for countless years. On the arm of a weather vane, pointing north. However, it was three rather disconsolate creatures that sat down to early breakfast after a few hours' fitful sleep. They had encountered a major problem. How to get the sword down?
What a pity we haven't got about 30 or 40 extra long ladders that we could tie together to reach the roof, muttered Constance.
Oh, do be quiet, Constance, Matthias grumbled. That must be the 10th time you've said that in the last hour.
Sorry, only trying to help, she mumbled.
Methuselah pushed his porridge aside.
There are only two ways that you could help, my friend. One, by keeping silent. Two, by turning yourself into some creature that could climb all the way up to that roof. A bird, or a squirrel, or something.
They sat and stared at Methuselah in amazement. A solution of stunning simplicity had been found.
I do hope that Mrs. Squirrel hasn't decided to sleep in, said Matthias. She'll need an early start if she's going to make it back by lunchtime.
Mrs. Squirrel, or Jess as she liked to be called, was only too pleased to oblige her friends from Redwall. Having been given full instructions by Matthias, Jess stood at the base of the immense abbey building. The squirrel performed what looked like an intricate, acrobatic dance, followed by several cartwheels at lightning speed.
She's limbering up,
Mr. Squirrel explained to Matthias. A large crowd of mice and woodlanders had gathered to witness the epic ascent. Not even in the oldest recorded writings was there any mention of a creature venturing to climb as high as the abbey roof. It was a formidable task, for the roof soared to nearly twice the height of the bell tower. Jess elbowed her way through the throng. She kissed Mr. Squirrel, patted her son Silent Sam upon the head, then shook paws with Constance, Matthias, and Methuselah. With a brisk, cheery manner, she scooped up a handful of soil, rubbing it into her paws to give them some extra gripping power.
Lovely day for a climb, she remarked offhandedly.
Then away she went. Paw over paw up the massive abbey face. The lower wall, with its arched sandstone window frames, held no difficulties for the tough squirrel. She climbed with speed and alacrity. Lifting herself over the gutter with a neat flick of her bushy tail, Jess cluttered across to a small slate-side roof. She was temporarily lost to view at the start of the second stage. As she came into sight again, the watchers below could not help but notice that the climb was more difficult, progress was slower. Mr. Squirrel cupped his paws and called up.
"Are you all right there, Jess?"
Latching her tail around a projecting gargoyle, Jess shouted back.
"Well, I'm making headway, me dear. This stone, though, it's a bit rough on the old paws and claws. Not like good old wood or tree bark."
Chins went up, heads tilted back. The crowd below followed the ascent of the plucky Jess Squirrel. By this time, she seemed to the watchers to be rapidly diminishing in size as she forged upwards. Formal, who was never too keen on heights, covered his eyes with a paw.
"Grr, my dearie, dearie, me. Seem looking an owly bird all the ways up there. Nay, I'm afeard to look."
Although Matthias had to agree with Formal, he continued looking upwards. Jess was reduced to a mere speck now. The young mouse gritted his teeth, willing the brave squirrel onwards.
"Go on, Jess, you can do it. Not far to the gable now."
The crowd fell silent. All that could be heard was Silent Sam sucking his tiny paw as he clutched onto his father's tail. Suddenly, Winifred the Otter broke the quiet.
"Look, Jess has made it over the gutter. She's on the roof."
A mass cheer went up. The squirrel was on the last lap. Now she would have to call into play all of her climbing ability to keep going up the treacherously steep, smooth slates. Methuselah polished agitatedly at his spectacles.
"Where is she now? Will someone please enlighten me?"
"She's on top of the roof, walking with a foot either side of the apex towards the gable,"
yelled Abbot Mortimer. Methuselah sniffed.
"No need to shout, Father Abbot. I'm only hard of sight, not hearing."
Mr. Squirrel clapped his jaws joyfully.
"Oh, she made it! My Jess has made it!"
Amid the riot of jubilation, Matthias watched. The weather vane moved slightly, indicating that Jess, actually out upon the north pointer, must be trying to retrieve the sword. What a daring climb! What a courageous creature! Jess Squirrel would surely take her place in the annals of Redwall Abbey. Mr. Squirrel held Silent Sam up in his arms.
"Look, Sam, Mum's done it. She's on the way back down now."
Silent Sam clenched his little paws over his head. He shook them like a tiny champion. Nobody in all the world was a better climber than his mother. Matthias waited for a glimpse of the sword, but Jess was not halfway down when a shout of consternation arose from the crowd below.
"Look out! She's being attacked by sparrows!"
Sure enough, the fierce birds were whirling in close to the intrepid Jess. They tried to peck at her, seeking to dislodge her or distract her enough to make her fall. It was a fearsome, sickening drop should she lose her grip. Matthias took command. He acted swiftly.
"Hurry, get the 6 best field and harvest mouse archers. Those birds have got to be stopped immediately."
The angry sparrows persisted with their savage assault. Jess kept on descending resolutely. She couldn't seem to defend herself. The abbot and Constance had to leap forward to restrain Silent Sam. He had left his father and was trying to scramble up the base of the abbey wall with his small dagger clenched in his teeth. Constance attempted to reason with Sam.
"Stay clear, little one. You'll only distract your mum. Look, she's doing splendidly. An old bunch of sparrows can't bother her. Stand back now. Here come the bow mice."
Speedily notching shafts to their strings, the archers angled their bows upwards.
"Do not aim to kill any of the birds,"
the abbot cried.
Shoot to frighten them off.
Shoot! Matthias yelled. The first volley of arrows was launched. They fell short of the sparrows. Jess carried on scrambling downwards, beating off attackers whenever she had a free paw.
They're getting within range now, shouted Matthias. Aim, fire!
The mouse archers sent off a hail of arrows that came close enough to cause a scatter among the sparrows. Taking advantage of their brief confusion, Jess clambered down onto the small side roof. The tenacious birds regrouped and came at her again. Below, the bowmice stood ready.
She'll make it down, Ambrose Spike yelled. One more good volley should scare them off.
Ready, fire, called Matthias. The deadly shafts hissed upwards, causing a mad flurry among the attackers. Purely by accident, a stray arrow struck one young sparrow. It came tumbling down the slope of the small roof, dropping to earth like a stone, the arrow sticking in its leg just above the knee joint. Cheated of their intended victim, the sparrows flew off, chirping bad-temperedly. Constance snatched up a woven rush-washing basket. Holding the small sparrow firmly with her paw, she gripped the arrow in her teeth and yanked it clear from the bird's leg. The badger then upended the basket, imprisoning the maddened sparrow beneath it. Shouts of joy mingled with relief greeted Jess Squirrel as she dropped wearily to the grass. Phew, she gasped. What a wild bunch of savages those sparrows are. I thought they had me once or twice back there. Before the heroic squirrel could be united with her family, Matthias came dashing across. Jess, where is the sword? He panted.
The squirrel shrugged and shook her head.
It wasn't there, Matthias. I climbed out along the north pointer and actually saw the shape of the sword in the holder where it was supposed to rest. There were even some loose rusty wires that may have held it in position at one time or another. But there was definitely no sword. I'm sorry, Matthias. I tried my best.
Of course you did, Jess, said Matthias, hiding his disappointment. Thank you very much for your valiant efforts.
Half an hour later, the crowd had dispersed and gone about their business. Matthias sat with his back against the abbey wall, his mind in a turmoil. All that hard work. Solving the clues, burning midnight oil, endangering the lives of his friends, it had all come to nothing. He beat his paws against the stones of the abbey, a tear of frustration gleaming in his eye.
Why, Martin, why? He moaned.
The captive sparrow fluttered her wings against the upturned basket.
I kill you, she chattered angrily at Matthias. I kill a mouse. Let Warbeak free, you dirty worm.
Matthias peered through the cracks at the insulting prisoner.
Oh, shut your beak, you little monster, he muttered. You're in no position to kill anyone.
The sparrow's venomous temper increased.
King Bull Sparrow, he kill you. Make dead quick fast.
Matthias laughed mirthlessly.
Will he indeed? Well, you tell King Thingummy, if you should bump into him again, that you've met Matthias the Warrior, and I don't kill that easily, my bad-tempered little friend.
This last statement sent the young sparrow off into a veritable dance of rage.
Mouse no friend of Warbeak. Kikili, kikiliit.
Matthias tapped the basket with his foot. Listen, Warbeak, if that's your name. You'd better improve your temper, or you'll find yourself without food to eat or any medical attention. So if I were you, I'd sit quietly for a while and think about that. Matthias spun on his heel and marched off, the enemy sparrow's chirp still ringing in his ears.
No want of food, no need attention. Warbeak sparrow, all brave, kill eat.
Matthias sighed wearily. There was just no talking to some creatures. Chapter 10. Cella the Fox continued to complain. She must have a certain type of herb that was not in her kit.
It could only be found in Mossflower Wood at the dark of the night. Cluny listened to the fox's pleas, knowing that they were merely an excuse to gain her freedom. He paused, as if to deliberate, watching the hopeful expression on Sella's face.
"Hem, I can see that you need this herb, so why don't you send your son Chicken Hound to get it?"
Sella was never stuck for a ready answer.
"No, no, I'm afraid that's useless, sir. He's too young and inexperienced. Chicken Hound wouldn't know where to start looking."
Cluny nodded sympathetically.
"Aye, you're probably right. I suppose I'll have to stretch a point. You can go off to the woods to search for this vital herb, but be warned, Fox. There will be two rats with you all the time. One false move and I'll have that bushy tail of yours to trim the collar of my war cloak. Is that understood?"
Sella's head bobbed vigorously.
"Of course, sir. What reason would I have to play you false? I'm looking forward to a good share of plunder, once I've healed you and Red Wall is conquered."
The huge tail snaked out and caressed the fox.
"Of course you are, my friend. How silly of me."
Cluny actually smiled. Sella shuddered. That evening, Sella left the church, accompanied by Redtooth and Fangburn. Secretly, she could have danced with delight. Only two guards. With her knowledge of Mossflower, Sella could quite easily give them the slip for 15 minutes or so. Back at the church, Cluny had risen from his bed. He attempted an exploratory walk, leaning on his banner as he stumped gingerly around the room. Good. In a short while he would be back to his old self again. Cluny spoke aloud to the picture of Martin bound to his standard.
"Ha! That fox should easily give those idiots of mine the slip. Then she can deliver my false plans to your abbot. It's all going along quite smoothly. Bit of a blow for your side, eh, Mouse?"
Twilight tinged Mossflower Wood. Sella sniffed the breeze. She glanced up at the sky. It would soon be dark, and she could keep her rendezvous with the Mouse Abbot at the old stump. Redtooth and Fangburn were both unhappy and uncomfortable. For the last hour, Sella had led them through stinging nettles, swarms of midges and marshy ground. They blundered along, hacking at the undergrowth with cutlass and spear.
"I think we must be somewhere near the Mouse Abbey,"
Fangburn said.
"Stow the gab. Keep your eyes on the fox," Redtooth snarled.
"I wish I'd brought some lanterns along with us,"
Fangburn whined. Redtooth's already dangerously thin patience snapped. He grabbed hold of his snivelling crony and started shaking him.
"Listen, thickhead. If you don't stop your moaning, I'll chop your tongue out with my cutlass, do you hear me?"
Fangburn struggled free. Angrily, he jabbed at Redtooth with his spear.
"You dare try anything with that blunt old bread knife, and I'll spear your gizzard before you can blink an eye."
"Oh, you will you?"
"Yes, I will, smarty rat. Then take that, big mouth." "Ouch. Punch me, would you? I'll soon show you."
Together the rats crashed into a prickly bush, kicking, biting and pummeling each other. Claws, tails and teeth came into play. They went at it hammer and tongs for several minutes until Redtooth emerged the victor. His nose was bleeding and he had lost a tooth, but he was in better shape than his opponent. Fangburn crawled miserably out of the wrecked bush. Both eyes were blacked, a chunk of his left ear was missing, and his whole body was covered in long, raking claw marks and prickles. He bent painfully to retrieve his spear. Seizing the opportunity, Redtooth landed him a mighty kick on the bottom. His nose ploughed up a furrow of soil. Panting furiously, Redtooth berated Fangburn.
"You half-witted fool! Now see what you've done."
While you were busy assaulting a superior officer, you let the fox escape.
Fangburn sat up. He winced through discoloured eyes.
I let the fox escape? Me?
Oh, no. You're the one in charge. You let her get away, not me. Wait until I report this to Clooney. I'll tell him that you... Will you shut up?
Red Tooth yelled.
It's no use us standing here arguing. We'd better get searching for the fox. I'll go this way and you go that way. The first one to find her keeps shouting till the other arrives. Have you got that? Now get moving.
The two rats stumbled off through the woods in different directions. Meanwhile, in another part of Mossflower Wood, Sellers sneaked along, looking from left to right. There was the three-topped oak. There was the abbey wall. Ah, here it was, the old stump. The moonlight illuminated the scene clearly. She was alone. Where was the Mouse Abbot? A heavy paw clamped itself around Sellers' neck from behind. Her tongue shot out. Struggling uselessly, she gagged and choked. Constance's gruff voice growled in her ear.
Be still, fox, or I'll snap your neck like a dead twig.
Sella froze. There was nothing more dangerous than a fully grown badger. Their strength and ferocity were renowned. Constance's free paw snapped the herb pouch from the fox's belt. She shook the contents out onto the stump. Grabbing the copy of Clooney's invasion plans, she studied it briefly. Then stuffed it into her belt.
Your abbot was supposed to meet me with a reward, Sella whispered.
The badger's eyes blazed with contempt as she spun the vixen around.
Here's your reward, traitor.
Whump! Constance dealt Sella a sharp blow between the ears. The fox fell in a senseless heap. Constance ducked behind a tree and called out in a high-pitched voice.
Over here! I've got the fox! Quick, over here!
Red Tooth was first to arrive. He came dashing through the bushes and halted at the sight of the unconscious fox among the ferns.
Hell's teeth, fox! Where's Fangburn? What the devil do you mean slinking off like that? Get up on your feet and answer me.
Constance emerged from behind the tree.
I don't think she'll wake up for a while yet. Fancy meeting you here, rat.
Red Tooth got over his surprise quickly. Seeing the badger unarmed, he swished his cutlass through the air and smiled menacingly.
Well, well, it's the friend of the mice. So we meet again, badger.
Constance stood tall, her huge paws folded.
Red Tooth, isn't it? I see you still remember me from your defeat at the wall. I told you then we had a score to settle.
Red Tooth bared his teeth and snarled.
I'm going to enjoy this, badger. I'll make sure you die slowly.
The rat leaped at Constance, swinging his cutlass expertly. For a heavy badger, his adversary moved lightly and skillfully. Neatly sidestepping a cutlass thrust, she cuffed the rat smartly on the point of the nose. Stung into retaliation, Red Tooth charged Constance with the point of his blade. A fierce kick in the ribs and a swift chop to the claw sent the rat and the cutlass in opposite directions. Red Tooth lay winded upon the ground. Constance leaned over him.
Get up and retrieve your weapon,
the badger growled. As Red Tooth stood, he grabbed a handful of earth and flung it in Constance's eyes. The big badger staggered back, rubbing at the grit which clogged her vision. The rat picked up the cutlass and swung it, slashing wildly at his enemy's thick fur. He scored several hits. Suddenly panic gripped him. The wounded badger had seized the blade, regardless of its keen edge. Constance pulled Red Tooth in, close. She gave a sideways push, snapping the cutlass blade in two pieces. Picking the rat over on his back, she flung the broken blade away and grabbed the rodent's tail tightly with both paws. Red Tooth screamed in terror as he felt himself leave the ground to go spinning aloft over the badger's head. With his tail pulled taut and the wind whistling through his fangs, Red Tooth howled as the trees went by in a green blur. Like an athlete throwing the hammer, Constance whirled on her hind legs faster and faster until suddenly she threw her burden with a colossal heave. Red Tooth would have flown a record distance had there not been a stout sycamore tree several yards away. Ignoring her injuries, Constance called into the surrounding woods. "Over here! He's over here!" Then she limped swiftly off in the direction of Redwall with the captured plans. Only moments later, Fangburn came blundering through the ferns. He tripped upon the groaning fox who was just coming round.
"Here, what's happened? Where's Red Tooth?"
he asked anxiously. Sella sat up, rubbing her head, trying to recognize her surroundings. She saw the old stump littered with her herbs and potions. The pouch lay nearby. Holding her head with both paws, she tried to halt the thumping ache. Damn that badger's hide. She'd taken the plans from Sella as if she were confiscating acorns from a baby mouse. So much for the rich rewards. Fangburn prodded Sella with a spear.
"Hey, you, pay attention. I asked you where Red Tooth is."
Sella probed a loosened tooth with her tongue.
"Leave me alone. How should I know?"
Fangburn persisted.
"Now listen, Fox. I want to know what's been going on here. I'm sure I heard Red Tooth calling out. Hell's whiskers, wait until Clooney gets to hear about this."
Sella pointed a shaky paw.
"There's your rat, by that big sycamore yonder. Looks like he's had a spot of bother too."
Fangburn touched Red Tooth with his foot.
"Oh, he's dead. Look, this sword's been broken in two."
The fox and the rat stood looking at each other, their thoughts running on parallel lines. It was fairly obvious what must be done if they were to save their skins.
"Right," said Sella. "We'd better work out a good story to tell Clooney when we get back. He's not stupid, so we'd better get it right."
The unlucky pair stumbled off through the nighttime woodland, gesticulating and muttering together, weaving a fabric of lies that they hoped would satisfy Clooney the Scourge. Chapter 11. Once again the abbot's room was the scene of a late repast. The news that Constance had brought showed without a doubt that Clooney would soon be on the attack again. Abbot Mortimer was the first to admit that he had been mistaken.
"The intelligence brought to us by our friend Constance is conclusive. Clooney will never rest until he has Redwall under his heel. Therefore, I feel that I must apologize for my misjudgment of the situation. You, my commanders, were right. And now, thanks to Clooney, we know the secret details of the enemy horde's next attack."
The abbot slapped a paw down on the plans.
"It is all here. But as I have said before, I will not concern myself with the fighting of a war. It is my task to heal the injured and give sustenance to the defenders. It is the duty of you, my generals, to plan the repulse of this invasion."
Matthias held up a paw.
"Father Abbot, it is our duty not only to defend, but to retaliate."
There was a strong murmur of agreement from around the table. The abbot bowed and placed his paws within his wide habit sleeves.
"So be it," he said with great solemnity. "I leave the salvation of Redwall to you, my commanders."
The abbot bowed once more, then retired for the night, leaving Matthias, Constance, Winifred, Formal, and Ambrose Spike. The meeting continued. They were joined by Basil Staghare and Jess Squirrel. Methuselah also attended to act as mediator and counselor, approving some ideas while discouraging others, calming the hot head and encouraging the timid. Much good sense was talked, and the tone of the meeting was that of creatures who were determined to win at all costs. The discussion, running on sensible lines, went on until it was nearly dawn. It was a confident and satisfied group of friends who shook paws as the meeting ended. Basil insisted on taking Constance to the infirmary to have her wounds treated. The badger tried to shrug him off.
"Ha! Such a fuss over a few minor scratches," she grumbled.
The hare chuckled admiringly.
"A few minor scratches? Will you listen to the heroine? Why, my dear badger, those are honourable wounds, gained on the field of combat. I say, Jess, lend a paw here. Have you seen the dreadful gashes that friend Constance has collected? By the left, old girl, you should be oars to combat. Not even a stag could put up with slashes like that. Come on now, let's have you. There's a sensible girl."
Constance was led off muttering by Basil and Jess. All the rest retired to their beds, with the exception of Matthias and Methuselah. They strolled around the cloisters, savouring the peace of the midnight hours. "You know, old one, I can't help thinking that a victory would be assured if only we had the warrior's sword," Matthias said. Methuselah nodded wistful agreement.
"Indeed it would. But alas, for all our efforts, the trail is as cold as a midwinter night. I'm afraid we must resign ourselves to the fact that the sword is lost or hidden somewhere forever."
The old gatehouse keeper leaned upon the young mouse's arm as they walked along, talking of this and that. Eventually, the conversation came around to the sparrow's attack upon Jess. Methuselah shook a warning paw.
"Extremely dangerous birds, sparrows. Very warlike and quarrelsome. Luckily, they keep to themselves and will only attack if their territory is intruded upon, as you saw today. By the way, did you see that young one who was brought down by the archers?"
"I certainly did," Matthias replied. "Constance has got the bad-tempered little wretch imprisoned under a washbasket. What a nasty young villain. The arrow only scratched her, really. It was shock more than anything else that brought her down. Says her name is Warbeak."
Methuselah was taken aback.
"Do you mean to tell me you've talked with her? Remarkable. The sparrow language, or sparra, as it is called, is very difficult to comprehend."
"Oh, I don't know," said Matthias casually. "I didn't find it too hard, and at least the little hooligan seems to understand what I'm saying to her."
Methuselah's curiosity was aroused. "And what has she been saying to you, this, Warbeak?"
"Pretty much what you'd expect," Matthias replied. "Either she, or the leader, King Bull Sparrow, is going to kill me. Evidently she looks on anything that can't fly as an enemy."
They strayed over by the gatehouse. The old mouse invited Matthias in for a late nightcap. Methuselah appeared very interested in sparrows. He leafed through his record books.
"Let me see. Summer of the big drought. Winter of the deep drifts. Yes, I thought I'd find it here. Do you remember I told you of a sparrowhawk whom I treated about 4 years back? Well, here is my report, some small notes I made at the time. This hawk talked of the sparrows. She called them winged mice, though for the life of me I cannot see any comparison between highly civilized mice and those primitive savages. Point was, though, this sparrowhawk said she'd been told that the sparrows once stole an object of great value to our abbey. She didn't say what it was. I thought the bird was merely trying to impress me with idle gossip. I should have questioned her further. We may have found out just what that object was."
Matthias looked pensive.
"Do you think it could have been the sword?"
The old mouse sat tapping his paw upon the record book.
"It could have been, Matthias. It could have been. You see, the sparrows never communicate or bother with us. They never fly into our abbey. But up on the roof, well, that's a different matter. They consider that to be their territory. As I see it, the sword was the only object of value we had up there, although we did not know it at the time. So who else but another bird would know that the sparrows had stolen it?
By the whiskers, old one!